Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. The other day, I saw an insightful comic. A man was standing in front of a crowd, and he asked, "How many of you want change?" Almost everyone has raised their hand. In the very next panel, he asks, "How many of you want to change?" People are silent, looking at their shoes. Nobody raises their hand. Change is not for sissies. It's hard work. Today, we visit a greenhouse and talk about change and strategic planning and community-shared agriculture, all in a rather frank discussion of some of the bottlenecks in our thinking around local food and in our actions around local food.
I think gardening is the new therapy, and it's cheap, and you get tomatoes in the end, so it's pretty cool. Sometimes the desire is greater than the commitment to purchase local vegetables. Is there a threshold of people that are willing to accept this lifestyle and willing to be cooks and not just preparers and box openers?
Sometimes I start a conversation without knowing where it will end. I knew that my guest today was a lover of process and planning, and he did talk about that. But much of the conversation tended to be on the social and cultural factors related to the production and the consumption of food. We met up on a pleasant summer afternoon in my guest's backyard. You'll hear the sound of birds in the background and the odd mosquito, and we tried to make sure that the ice in the drinks wasn't too loud. Pull up a chair. Join us.
My name's Sean Dolter. Myself and Kim Thistle, my wife, we own the greenhouse and garden store in Little Rapids. We've been there since really 1999 when we purchased the business off of her family, Don and Sylvia Thistle. Used to be in Steadybrook. It was part of Thistledown, which was a florist and the horticultural side. So We just purchased the horticultural side. So we moved it here on this 7-acre piece of property up in Little Rapids. So since that time, we've been doing two things. We've been doing horticulture, which is the production of flowers and selling trees and shrubs and doing landscaping and all those wonderful garden center things. And the other side, it was when the greenhouse is empty out, we get into vegetable production. So we are considered a farm, and we run it as a farm, but also as a business.
What's the relationship between horticulture and agriculture in this province?
Oh, I think there's a tremendous relationship. One is policy-based or legislation-based. Horticulture is considered part of the responsibilities of the Agri-Foods Division. For us personally, we need the infrastructure to have a successful horticulture business. So when we're growing anything from vegetable bedding plants to herbs to flowers, it all takes soil, it all takes energy to heat the greenhouses, it takes infrastructure, greenhouses and plastic. So there's a great relationship. And once we're done with the horticultural season, you know, it's probably the first, second week in June. We're not done with it then, but really that's the peak season is May and June. We have empty greenhouses. And we still have that relationship with a clientele that wants to have freshly grown vegetables. And we also, from a skill perspective, if you can grow one of hundreds of different varieties of flower seeds, you're a pretty good grower of agricultural seeds too. Right. So I find our clientele is changing a lot too, because a lot of do-it-yourselfers, I find the workshops and the little seminars we have are always in big demand. We always have waiting lists. Western Environment Center has been a great little partner with us, and they're kind of influencing the people growing their own seeds, growing their own flowers, growing their own vegetables, which is kind of counterproductive to our business model. But I think from a perspective of once you get connected with what you grow, whether it's ornamental or whether it's something that you eat, we kind of got you for life. And as long as we establish that relationship and it doesn't become too one-sided from a business perspective, like, yeah, we'll dump your money here and leave, as long as we support, you know, knowledge exchange and learning, you're dealing with a plant. And there's a certain level of responsibility as a retailer that you should have, a certain knowledge base level that you should have.
What do people want from their food these days? What do they ask about your food?
Surprisingly enough, we haven't been asked the organic question a lot. People presume that...
You guys look like organic growers.
Yes, we look like organic. We smell nice and healthy, yeah. I just really think it's a connection with the process. People are very busy, and usually they're at their desks and they're stressed out. out, I think gardening is the new therapy. And it's cheap and you get tomatoes in the end. So it's pretty cool. We just did a survey of everyone we did a workshop with this year. A lot of the results coming back from the survey was, you know, it was great. It was a great experience. This is how I want to live my life. But you need something more general. People are coming with absolutely no knowledge at all. For us, we make our living from this. Mm-hmm. So when people come, we want to have a reasonable price for knowledge exchange. Mm-hmm. We want them to leave with something mm-hmm. that they did themselves mm-hmm. and with enough information not to kill it. And then we want them to come up and step up their game all the time. I don't think they're all going to be farmers, yeah. but I think that for new entrants into agriculture, yep. they got to start somewhere. This is a lifestyle. It's a commitment. It's a commitment right. to failure and learning from that. And it's a commitment to celebrating our successes. So
farming. A commitment farming. To failure.
A commitment to failure. Well,
that's
I'm going to get the t-shirt.
Eat, sleep, fail, move on. So speaking of new entrants, what are some of the challenges? What can we do to make it a bit more successful?
Integrated into our school system right straight through from grade 6 right till final year of high school. I think that that's the foundation. That is the platform, I think, for our future. It's not sexy to be a farmer. I think it's the clothes, but besides that, it's the way the kids think about it. Yeah. And we hire probably 6 university and high school mm-hmm. students a year. One thing that we've been seeing is there's a whole disconnect with our youth and their food or anything that's grown. And the aha moments during the summertime with every one of our students are amazing. So there's this whole sense of pride in the industry that needs to be grown mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. our education system. Mm-hmm. So if you talk about agriculture, stop coming up with what is being done in Missouri. We have extremely positive local stories of farmers, and it is a business. Mm-hmm. Farming is not just about growing a piece of vegetable. It is a business. It's highly technical, too. Mm-hmm. And you never hear about that side of it, right? Mm-hmm. You need chemistry to be a farmer. You know, you have to have a good understanding of mechanics and physics and different things like that. Mathematics, extremely important, believe me, even when we have, you know, even mix and ratios of fertilizer and stuff, right? Yeah. So there's a lot to our industry that's not about, you know, it's just a soft, yeah, it's cool to have a plant in a school greenhouse when you're in grade 6. But, you know, when you're in grade 9 and you're in grade 10 and you're in grade 11, there's a lot of curriculum objectives that could be met by using local experiences and get kids out of the classroom and get them into the farms and teach a course in a barn.
Yeah. When you're hiring people, have you found out that a certain kind of background really lends itself to being good in the greenhouse and in agriculture?
Yes and no. I used to hire people from how government hires people. I look at their resume. I did up a weighted assessment. I was very quantitative about it. And when they came to the interview, I went through all my standardized questions and everything else. And I weighted their responses and stuff. I didn't look at who I was hiring. What I do now, because I do the majority of the hiring, you really have to hire for attitude and you have to hire for the type of person, like the person that has a skip in their step. Okay. So where they park their vehicle in my parking lot and how quick they walk across the parking lot and their gait of their walk and how, you know, they should walk, like walking is a waste of time. I just got to get it over with.
Keep that in mind, young folks. You want a job at the greenhouse.
But also, don't look for your jobs like a paint-by-numbers chart. You know, research. I had people call me and say, the morning of the interview, you know, how do I get to your business? And they sit down and I almost have to tell them, well, this is the greenhouse. Do you know what we do? Yeah. No, not really. Yeah. Oh, come on. Really? There's a lot of things to look for in an individual, and I think the biggest thing is attitude. A lot of farmers are having issues with succession. Their kids, they don't want their kids to be farming, which is stupid, but I know. But I wanted my kids to get their MBA and to go off, and they're not here in the province, right? And I think back and I say, yeah, we're really doing our kids a disservice because we're not sharing with them. We're sharing with them the bad. We're not sharing with them the sense of accomplishment and things like that. So it's...
Isn't that a bit of the attitude in many parts of rural Newfoundland? You're telling your kids, get out of here. There's nothing here for you. And they leave.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, they're all going. What happened?
You're right. That's how it seems about the farmers and people. But when you look at successful businesses outside of what we're doing in farming, I look at contractors that I deal with and subcontract to. Well, their kids are getting into the contracting business because they have had their sons and daughters working for them because they had to. And then they see the economic benefit to say, okay, I can work home and make 100 grand a year, or I can go to university and start at 40 grand a year somewhere. Yeah. What we do with our kids, though, is we shelter them sometimes. And we say, no, you do your homework. Mom and dad are going to the farm and going to work. You do your homework. You go here, you go there. But instead of integrating them into the farm lifestyle.
Do you have a song that you hum to yourself that we should cut under this interview somewhere?
Dirty deeds done dirt cheap. Dirty deeds, dirt, like dirt, dirt in
yeah,
soil.
Yeah, that's
soil.
Right. Yeah.
So dirty deeds done dirt cheap is my business model.
Is it a song too?
Oh my God, yes. Dirty deeds done dirt cheap. Who is it? Come on. And everyone on the radio going, AC/DC.
Okay.
I think it's AC/DC.
Okay.
Hey, it's not Nickelback.
They're from farm country.
They are. Yeah.
Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap by AC/DC. Today, I'm speaking with Sean Dolter. In this section, we get into his vision for agriculture for the next 5 to 10 years.
Is it possible that by focusing on new entrants, we're sort of missing the other part of the process, which is succession planning? Is it we'll end up with new people, but older people will retire and their farms will go fallow?
I think we're missing opportunities mentoring new entrants with our existing farmers. Mm. And I think new entrants can come from anywhere. You know, we're in the process of hopefully retiring soon. So we're going to be looking, we're looking at selling our
business.
You're
awfully young to retire.
I know, I must say. Yes, I am. But I'm not retiring. It's my next chapter in life.
I have a list,
okay? Yes. With ourselves, I like to put out an ad in the paper. I'm not, but I like to put out an ad in the paper that says, successful business operation looking for 2 people with a great attitude and want to live this lifestyle. Because they're out there, but they just don't know it. They don't know that there's opportunities in the agri-foods industry in order to get involved in processing and production and stuff like that.
You've been involved in a project here related to pulling together farmers in the Humber Valley region. Tell me a bit about that.
The Grand Lakes Center for Economic Development was granted a Growing Forward 2 project funding to put together a strategic agricultural plan, so a SAP for the Humber Valley area. So we have 38 farms, according to the last statistics that I looked at. My job was to build the strategic planning process. I don't want to bore anyone because I love strategic planning. It's fantastic. But I was a consultant for that. Yeah. My former life, I developed certain skill sets and jabbering, is in case anyone hasn't noticed, and also looking at frameworks for taking chaos sometimes and creating, some linear and cyclic processes to get your end product. Yeah. So we establish a vision for the valley of where we want agriculture to be in the next 10 to 20 years, and through a series of workshops and kitchen table workshops and one-to-one interviews and group interviews, we put together a plan. And really the plan looks at establishing an agricultural cluster, and wide open, it says we have to start working together. And that's just not farmers. Farmers have to start working together, of course. And that's a big issue within itself, them not working together. But also, government has to start, and the institutions have to start working together as one cohesive body at looking at the future of agriculture. We have some tremendous challenges as an island and opportunities, which we have not really taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping the future will see ourselves working closer as smart commodities. So if we only have 10 to 15% sustainability in potatoes on the island, so why don't we put a goal forward for that commodity to have 1,000 acres go into potato production? Does it need to be one farmer?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
But do those farmers need to be linked into a process in which they could have a common brand and they could actually compete with what we're importing? Yes, that can happen. But you have to start talking and you have to start looking at business planning and making sure that you don't lose your identity as a farmer and that you can make a profit and that there's a whole bunch of other elements that, that farmers want to maintain. You can still have that and work together with other farmers.
Is there a next step for this process?
I would like to have a farm registry program, and any money that you get is connected to your ability to play ball with the other farmers. Mm-hmm. I think a regional process needs a model. We've never ever tried a model here, besides model forest and stuff like that around forestry. I would like to have a model region for agriculture. It could be anywhere in Newfoundland, Labrador, but I want a government, I want our sector, I want our farmers to say, for the next 5 years, we're going to commit ourselves to making something happen. And we're going to look at how to strategically set up ourselves up for 20 years down the road, maybe. Okay? What do we need? What components do we need? Let's look at right now what we're importing. Let's look at what our capacity is. Let's look at our soil chemistry. Where could we be growing and how could we be growing it better? One example in the Humber Valley, we have 0.5 acre of greenhouses producing vegetables. That's it. You know how small that is? That's 20,000 square feet. We also, out of 6-point-something% of the farms in Newfoundland, we produce almost 20% of the revenue in the Humber Valley. That's a phenomenal rate. Yet, we haven't even invested in a large-scale greenhouse production facility. Yeah. Why haven't we? Yeah. We haven't done it because we haven't looked at the value of that and offsetting what we're importing and really taken a business perspective at the regional level and built something together. Everyone is in their little silos, and a farmer wants to be their own production, they want to be their own processor, they want to be their own marketer, they want to be their own mechanic, they want to be their own shipper, they want to be all these things. Yeah. They only need to be one. They need to be a producer, a farmer. Get back to what you do and do well. Everything else will save them money if they cooperate together.
And they create spaces for new entrepreneurs.
Very much so. Yeah. Well, you look at value-added processing. In Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and PEI, you're talking figures almost $500 million.
Is it fair to say that agriculture is also kind of invisible in this province? We have no songs or shanties about picking turnips. It's not part of the culture. We eat 3 times a day, for instance.
It's a bit of our heritage, I think. I don't know. My personal perspective is the first farmers were fisher people and veterans, and they farmed to
and
live.
Vikings,
exactly. Yeah. But they farmed to live. In the Humber Valley region, it started off with the veterans program in 1934, I think, and it went on from there with Cornbrook Pulp and Paper, and Pasadena started up as small farm areas in order to build the railway and all this stuff, right? So I think farming was a means to an end, and it really has not become industrialized to a point, and farmers are not great marketers. They're really not. We've branded ourselves as a fishing province, and we have not branded ourselves as an agricultural province, with good reason, because we're not there yet. But we need to do a lot of work on that. Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest areas of growth is marketing ourselves and our agritourism opportunities, because no one's thinking agritourism either. Yeah. And except Lester's Farm and places like that, that I think do a great job. I had a great benefit, as did you, of going to Iceland, and I always talk about that because it blew me away. Going to farms and sitting down in good restaurants and having a little bit of yogurt whey and next to cow shits and watching cows. Yeah. So a little bit of that is, I guess, theater, but I think a lot of it is we're sharing our farming heritage. We'll be right back.
Yes. That's AC/DC with what is apparently a traditional greenhouse song, Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. I'm speaking today with Sean Dolter, a co-owner and operator of the Greenhouse in Little Rapids. What does a farmer learn about consumers from operating a CSA, a Community Shared Agriculture Program? In this section, Sean talks about the challenges of educating people on the care and preparation of food.
If you were to get a phone call tonight from somebody with political influence and they said, Sean, we really need to do something about this way forward, that would be effective.
That would be effective?
Yes.
Take $10 million and start with farmers in a region of Newfoundland and Labrador, a regional cluster for farming. And start with regional slaughter facilities, regional storing and distribution centers, places where they could get the highest value instead of being their own direct marketers. Start somewhere, but put money where it counts. And that money is to build the infrastructure around making it work into the future, not just paying for some farmer to grow a canola crop. Nothing against canola.
No.
I'm just saying. Give us a testimonial that would be invasive into other parts of Newfoundland and Labrador with regards to how you can do things.
Yeah.
Create a model of success and make that work. And it doesn't have to be huge. Yeah. It could be in vegetable production, a cluster in that. I would rather see a cluster in the whole regional cluster.
Yeah.
But besides that, just make it work like that. Now, if the distribution center has to be in the middle of Newfoundland, in Labrador, maybe it should be. But start somewhere. I had so many articles from the U.S. and Canada on successful projects and how they were done. We don't need to recreate the wheel. It's there. We just have to get off our butts and accept risk. What's the difference between a successful entrepreneur and a not so successful entrepreneur? A not so successful entrepreneur, in my view, is someone that says, yeah, I have a great idea, but I'm not willing to take the risk to make it happen. But a successful entrepreneur says, I need to make this happen. And these are the safeguards that I'm going to put in place so I don't lose everything.
Right.
But I'm going to move the ball forward and it's going to happen tomorrow. And that's really the mindset that we need to have.
You've had a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, for a number of years.
Yeah.
What has that taught you about the consumer?
Sometimes the desire is greater than the commitment to purchase local vegetables. I think a lot of people, they sign up for a program, they sign our contract. We make them sign a contract, by the way. Because, you know, the other day, eight people didn't show up for the baskets because their lives are too busy. We've harvested the food. It's ready to go. Okay, we're not a grocery store. See, they're very nice people and they're very busy people. But this is the issue, is that, you know, someone will sign up and they'll say, I've loved it, it's so good, it's great, but I don't know what to do with half the stuff you grow, okay? So we're not about growing turnip, okay?
Yeah.
You buy a CSA from a greenhouse operator, you're going to expect a lot of greens, a lot of cucumbers, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of that non-root oriented vegetables and fruits. So that desire is there to be home and to cook remarkable meals with local produced vegetables and stuff like that. But then after half a year, we got a lot of people that opt out because they're just saying one thing is their lives are too busy to actually drive down and pick it up on a certain hour of a certain day of the week. And then the second thing is, you know, I don't know what to do with this product. It just went and rotted in the fridge for a while, right? And then the third thing is my kids won't eat it because my husband won't eat it or my wife won't eat it, okay?
Right.
The desire is there. If you're looking at challenges, that's probably our number one challenge. The break-even point for us, we have not met it yet. With us, it's been an experiment and an act of love for 6 years or so, and we really got to see what we're going to do with it. But when we make that decision, it really has to do with the people buying, our consumers. Is there a threshold of people that are willing to accept this lifestyle and willing to be cooks and not just preparers and box openers? And this food skills is a huge area that's left untapped, by the way. We have people work for us. I have friends that won't eat a tomato because they don't like the texture in their mouth. We've lost our connection with the experience of food. And really, for us to be successful at the CSA program, we have to build up in people the desire to change their lifestyle, to start cooking again and start experimenting and start, you know, looking for recipes and start having date night in the kitchen with their spouses and partners, right?
We've gone through several decades of self-help, heal yourself in 5 minutes a day or
something.
Exactly, like
that. Exactly.
Is that what this food thing is? For some people, it's like eat well and eat local, but...
But don't make it my problem. Yeah.
Make it easy for
Very
me.
Much. Make it easy for me.
Yeah.
And that's where the lifestyle comes in.
Yeah.
The lifestyle and the commitment. It is a real commitment to not go to a corner little bistro and pick up that nice little cute package of food that's already been prepared for you. It's a real sense that, okay, I've worked all day, and it's the me culture too, you know, like I've worked all day. I'm not coming home and spending an hour
to feed myself. That's horrible.
You know, and we are a fast food economy, but we're expecting then the same level of fast food delivery from our local foods. Yeah.
So based on all the victories and the challenges that you've experienced, would you go into farming again?
I love the lifestyle. I love the food, and I'm not crazy at my age about the work, but 20 years ago I was. So I would say yes, I would, but I would do it differently. I really think I would do it differently.
How would you do it differently?
I would look for an area that had the support mechanisms for me to do what I wanted to do and not have to have me be the everything in my business. I think that Kim, my wife, is a wonderful grower. She wants to grow. So she should be growing 8 hours a day, and we should have other support mechanisms to work with ourselves. We should have the Humber Valley Agricultural Association, which I am a card-carrying member and proud of it. And I should have my packaging bags for my agricultural products are called Humber Valley Fresh. And my SKU number is right there. I'm involved in the Humber Valley Agricultural Labor Cooperative. And I can get local labor for my farm for 2 months or my picking season. There's a list of qualified laborers. And they may be from Jamaica. They may be from Mexico, and or they may be local. So I could create little vignettes of opportunities to make me a better farmer that need to happen in my future mind's eye.
What's your favorite local food?
My favorite local food has to be, oh my God, there's so many, but I think it's going to be my wife's cucumbers. I made a cucumber salad last night that was cucumbers, local cucumbers, right there in the garden. We had onions. We had red wine vinegar. That wasn't local. And a couple other things, secret ingredients, and it was the most phenomenal thing. It was great. And dill. We went down and picked some dill. That is a wonderful, wonderful vegetable for me. Also, gin and tonic and cucumber. Try it. And then afterwards, eat the cucumber. Don't leave the cucumber in the glass. Okay?
Sean, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Great.
As I edited this program, I got in touch with Sean to update you on the greenhouse in Little Rapids. For this season in 2019, they have indeed discontinued the CSA, but they're still growing food for a local chef. And yes, the business did look for buyers this past fall and winter. They did sit down to meet with interested parties, four different parties. One of these was very interested, even sought out funding from the BDC and a bank. They were not approved. Sean and his wife Kim are still entertaining interested buyers, but they realize that this type of vocation is not just a business investment, it's a way of life. This makes succession planning more complicated.
I would like to have a farm registry program, and any money that you get is connected to your ability to play ball with the other farmers. One thing that we've been seeing is there's a whole disconnect with our youth and their food. We are a fast food economy, but we're expecting then the same level of fast food delivery from our local foods. Yes. Out of 6-point-something% of the farms in Newfoundland, we produce almost 20% of the revenue in the Humber Valley. A farmer wants to be their own production, their own processor, their own marketer, their own mechanic, their own shipper. They want to be all these things. They only need to be one. They need to be a producer. Get back to what you do and do well. Everything else will save them money if they cooperate together.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap by AC/DC, as requested by my guest, Honest. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by the trio of Harley Bray and Vivian and Phil Williams. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails. Thank you.
we've lost our connection with the experience of food.